Can you just describe the feeling on stage during your new DVD? It feels really just different and special. Is that the way that it came across, or is this, am I just imagining things?
You said different and what?
And special.
Well, you know, the three of us have been playing together for a really long time, and we've played a lot of places and been in a lot of different kinds of settings. You know, we've done everything from the small jazz rooms to large theaters, and so we really have a lot of experiences together that I think translates into music. And what I really wanted to do was to have the opportunity to document what it is that I've been doing for the last 10 years and document it in a way that was consistent with today's technology. 10 years ago, I did a DVD, and we named it Bootleg in Brazil because although the show was really great, you know, the technology wasn't so great. And so now, with this show, this is one of the last shows on a very, very long tour that we had done. And we really got lucky in the sense that we had all the great cameras there and the great audio guys were there. But it doesn't mean that you're going to have a show that you want to share with people in the end. And we got lucky because we had all the gear there. The guys did a fantastic job filming it. And we happened to have a really, really good show. And so that's what makes it so special. I think in that DVD, you're really seeing me do what I do at my best. And that's what is exciting for me, just personally, to have something like that documented and out there, you know, that I can look back on one day and say, yeah, this is who I was, this is what I did. And I think that makes it very special.
To a lot of people that live in the United States, their lives are large because of technology and things like that, but at the same time, too, they're pretty insular, and they don't really experience things outside of the United States. Could you just describe, because, I mean, you have a huge following in Japan, what it's like to play in Japan and what the crowds are like, because I'm sure people listening and watching the DVD are kind of like, why are these guys so quiet during the song?
Well, I want to really address something. That what you said, I really don't have a huge following in Japan, to be perfectly honest. That's an illusion. I think that's a brush that a lot of people get painted with. That thing, there was probably 500 people. My biggest audience, believe it or not, is in Latin America. When we go to Brazil, we play 2,000 plus. And in the United States now, it's really growing. We're doing really well here as well. We did a very extensive tour. And Europe is a place that I've been playing the last 15 years. I've been going over there and I really built things up in Europe. I've spent 3 months out of the year for the last 10, 12 years in Europe, touring everywhere you can imagine, from little Italian villages to, you know, London. So the thing is very interesting. Japan for me really kind of ended in 2006. I opened for the Rolling Stones with my solo band, and that was a great opportunity. And after I did that tour, for whatever reasons, I never went back to Japan. And I didn't go back to Japan until the Winery Dogs formed in 2012. So it's really not true about me being big in Japan. A lot of my friends are really big in Japan. I'm not, but hopefully that'll change. I think the interesting thing about Japan, having toured there a lot, is that the audiences there are so reserved. I mean, I did a gig in Los Angeles years ago. I was here with my solo band, and it was a bill that had Paul Gilbert and George Lynch on the show as well. And I'll never forget, after the first song, the audience was so loud, I thought I was in Brazil. So I think the audiences around the world are really enthusiastic. For whatever reason, in Japan, they're a little reserved. And it's interesting to watch my DVD at the end of the song. They kind of just kind of clap as if they were at the opera. And, you know, it's an interesting thing. If you watch the live DVD I did from Brazil, you know, people are screaming and singing, and it's a party atmosphere. But that's just the way Japan is. It doesn't mean that they don't like you. I just think that they, in general, are very reserved, very polite. And they're really curious. They're really curious to hear and know exactly what's going on at all times. And they'll ask you questions in interviews that are very specific. You know, how do you do this? How do you do that? So it's an interesting culture. It's very different.
I have to ask, after watching the DVD, and especially You Can't Save Me, I mean, Of course, there's differences between, you know, the original studio version and the live version, but I mean, your voice has held up beautifully over the years. Like, what do you do to keep your voice the way it is?
You know, a lot of it has to do with how you treat your body on when you're touring. You know, getting a lot of sleep, getting rest is very important. You know, when you're hanging out with your friends, you know, talking after the gig is a dangerous thing. I try not to talk too much after the gig. But the most important thing is knowing how to sing correctly. I think that's something where guys really get themselves in trouble, is because they sing in a way that's actually damaging to their voices. And I'm a perfect example. Years ago, I did a record in 1994, and I remember I was so excited. It was my major label debut, so to speak. And I was overly enthusiastic, and I overdid it. And after a week, I lost my voice. And when my voice came back, it wasn't quite the same. And by the time I had to go on tour, I was barely able to sing. And I went to the doctor, and I had developed nodes. I had a pinpoint nodule on my left vocal cord.
Wow.
And so we had it removed. My voice recovered, and about a year and a half later, the same problem happened. So I thought to myself, wow, this is the second time I've had nodes. I had two surgeries. And I went back to my vocal coach that I used to study with when I first moved to L.A., and he listened to my voice and told me everything I was doing wrong. And we completely rebuilt how I sing. And for example, the last tour I did 5 weeks with the Winery Dogs, and my voice held up, and I didn't have a problem because I changed the way I sing. And so if you sing correctly, and you don't scream, and you make sure that you got, always make sure you can hear yourself. That's also where singers get in trouble, especially in rock, when you're singing over a loud guitar. If you can't hear yourself, that's a great way to blow out your voice, and I think a lot of guys do that, even if they do sing correctly, because they just start singing too hard, and that can be damaging. But the things that I said are really how I tend to, you know, take care of my voice.
I've always wanted to ask you this, so I'm considering the fact that I think you have like 19 solo albums out, and you've got a lot of work with other bands. You've been in music forever. What do you think you've given up because of your life in music? Like, what's something that you would have loved to have done outside of music that you haven't gotten a chance to do yet because you're so entrenched in music?
Well, at this stage, you know, there's nothing really that falls into that category. I think as a young kid, when I was in my very, very early years of really learning the guitar and learning the, architecture of music, so to speak, I really spent all my time with the instrument. Everything I did was with the instrument. So when you do that, you know, socially you miss out on some things. I didn't play sports. If I hung out with people, I was hanging out with other musicians to play music. So, you know, which might have been a good thing. You know, I never got caught up in partying as a teenager or anything like that because I was very focused. So in the end, it all worked out for me. I wouldn't change anything, but I certainly was not a normal kid. You know, I wasn't, playing football or baseball. You know, if I wasn't doing a show, I was home practicing, trying to get better on my instrument.
All right. So what's on your bucket list almost for 2016? Like, you've got a busy year ahead of you. So what are your goals for this year, for this upcoming year?
Well, this year, you know, I'm in the middle of the new Winery Dog album cycle. Mm-hmm. And we made a really cool record. And I think that we outdid ourselves on this record compared to the first record, which I think surprised a lot of people. So we're really excited about our record. And we're planning on going out and doing a lot of shows to support the record. We just did 5 weeks in the United States. After the new year, we're going to head over to Europe and do a month there. We're going to be going to Latin America and, of course, Japan. And then we're going to go back out again in the United States. And so we've got plans to keep it going as long as we can.
All right. You've done so much in music. You know, we discussed before, you know, opening up for the Stones. Are there things that you haven't done yet that you'd really like to do?
But, I mean, I think there's things that... if I sat down and thought about it, you know, oh, I'd like to do that, I'd like to do this. Off the top of my head, I don't really know, because my mind doesn't necessarily work that way. I kind of, you know, I come up with ideas, and it's usually a musical idea, a song or a lyric or a guitar riff, and I see it through and I write. And that's the joy for me out of everything that I love doing most. You know, gigs are fun, touring can be fun, it's also grueling, But the one thing that's consistently rewarding for me under any circumstance is writing. I love to write. I love when I get inspired and I have an idea and I can get in the studio and spend some time and walk out and be able to share with people what it is that I'm hearing in my head. And so that for me is my favorite aspect of what I do.
Another question I've always wanted to ask you. I know Terrence Trent D'Arby is a huge influence on you. Have you ever played with him?
No, we hung out already a long time ago, probably over 20 years ago. It was kind of funny. One of my good friends was working with him, and I had just moved to L.A., and my friend invited me over, and I walked in, and there's Terrence sitting on the sofa. And so it was really one of those moments where, you know, you never expect to meet someone that's been an influence, you know, like that.
Yeah.
And there I was in my best friend's house, you know, sitting on the sofa with the guy, you know, talking, and that was pretty cool. But I never had the luxury or privilege to work with him, but that would have been very cool to actually do something. And you never know. I mean, anything can happen, so maybe that's something that could happen down the line.
Okay. Bottom line, why should someone pick up this DVD?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess they would have to be interested in guitar playing. You know, I mean, someone that's a fan of, you know, I would say anyone that's interested, that is into, like, you know, Cream era rock and roll, Cream, the Hendrix Experience, you know, that era of rock, you know, even Peter Frampton. I think this record will resonate with those people. And even people that don't know about that kind of music, I think, would be surprised. Because, you know, it's interesting, a lot of the young people, I don't think a lot of the young people understand, you know, what it is that we do as musicians. Because so many people can make music without even knowing how to tune a guitar. So, you know, I've actually had friends over, and I pick up the guitar and play something that to me was pretty, you know, relatively simple. And their minds are blown, you know, because they don't realize. It's like people are used to,
it's like magic,
you know, of using samples and pre-recorded things. And it's like, oh, wow, yeah, that's how that works. You actually have to play this instrument, you know. So I think a lot of people could relate to this DVD.